So we're going to go ahead, and I wanted the history of our tradition to be presented to us by people who were educated in it. And so I picked practitioners and ministers to give us the best possible history and foundation in our beautiful new thought teachings. And so I'm thrilled that Reverend Denise Judd is with us today to share her inspiration about the history of new thought. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you, Connie. So good morning, everyone, again. And I'll be sharing some things. There is so much information, as you probably already know, just even in that chapter. It's so condensed that there's no way we'll be able to cover everything. Plus, there are so many influences in the New Thought movement that we're going to hit on some. And not as much on the ones that Judy kind of already shared, and share some of the ideas that have some similarities through through time that have evolved to where we are today. So and you could do a dissertation on this, really. There's so much information, and so I will be referring to my notes a lot. This is more informational than inspirational. Hopefully the second half will be a little bit more of a experiential, so we'll see. The Britannica, which Judy mentioned last week, they say that New Thought is a mind healing movement based on religious and metaphysical presuppositions that originated in the United States in the 19th century. So they're saying 19th century. However, if you look at some of the ideas that have come through time, Plato was one that was mentioned as far as the Greek philosopher, as far as his form and about ideas. So I'll share a little bit more about him, as well as he was influenced by Socrates. So I'm going to share a little bit about him. And then, there's Quimby. We'll touch on him a little bit, and Ralph Waldo Emerson, which was a really big one for Ernest Holmes as well. So that's kind of where I'm going with that. And one of the things I thought was interesting that the Britannica said was that the origins of New Thought may be traced to a dissatisfaction on the part of many persons with scientific imperialism and the reaction to the religious skepticism of the 17th and 18th century. So that's kind of interesting. People get, there's some unrest about the ideas, and you don't, and we've experienced this throughout our journey. There's certain things you kind of go with for a while, and then you go, yeah, this doesn't feel quite, this doesn't resonate with me. This doesn't seem like a truth that I believe in. So starting with Plato, Platonism, based on the idealism of the 5th and 4th century BCE Greek philosopher Plato, who held that the realm of forms or ideas is more real than that of matter. So that's something we can get on board with, I think. There was also things like Swedenborgianism, Swedenborg's view that the material realm is one of effects whose causes are spiritual and whose purpose is divine. Then there was Hegelianism, based on the views of the 18th and 19th century German philosopher G.W.F. Hegel, Hegel, if anybody's taking notes. I can send you all these notes, so if you're interested, happy to do it. Hegel was his views were those concerning the external world, mental phenomena, and the nervous organism as the meeting ground of the body and the mind. Then there was also Hinduism, which played a factor, and transcendentalism, which is a form of idealism of the 19th century American philosopher and poet Ralph Waldo Emerson. So there you go. That's kind of a summary of way back when. One of the things that Britannica also said was that it's difficult to summarize new thought beliefs since they are so varied and to s such a large degree individualistic that it's possible to summarize some of the more prevalent views, but not overall. But one of the things that I thought was really wonderful was that truth is viewed as a matter of continuing revelation, and no one leader or institution can declare with finality what the nature of truth is. So that's what I see in the theme of all of these people is that they were very much into study. They, lectured, they wrote, they shared ideas, they studied other people's ideas. So, one kind of influences another, and they take pieces and parts that resonated, and then they continue to discover within themselves what they felt truth was. So let's see what else we got here. The other thing I thought was really interesting was they talked about faith healing, that there was a time in religion that they went like it was a big thing. Where the divine power to cure mental and physical disabilities, where that kind of went off and they did retreats and things of that nature. And some believed that you had to be touched. Some believed you had to sit in a pool of water that had healing properties. Some believed that I lost my thought, but the fact that there was this movement of recognizing that the body could be healed in other ways, not through medicine or through prescriptions. So, even though some of that doesn't necessarily line up with what we believe today as far as the types of faith healing that they were doing still is very valuable, knowing that in our history, people dabble in, hey, we think this is true. And that was one of the things that Quimby was really good about was he did some of his own tests on this information, things that he felt had some truth. He spent time trying to practice and embody and to see if it actually would work. So I want to go back real quick with Plato. We're going to talk about some of the ideas that came forth. Plato had a theory of forms that asserts that the physical world is not really the real world. Instead, ultimate reality exists beyond our physical world. Plato discusses his theory in a few different dialogues, including the most famous one called The Republic. His main philosophy was he believed that reality is an imperfect reflection of a perfect ideal called the forms, what he called it. He demonstrates the effect of this dual reality and the need for education in his Allegory of the Cave. Like the dualism of reality, Plato also believed that humans are of a dual nature, body and mind. One of the quotes that he said was, "When the mind is thinking, it is talking to itself." So Plato was a student of Socrates. He wrote many books. He believed in the world of ideas. Reason and logic were important to him, and he thought education was key. So again, this is a theme where education, where they're reading, they're studying, they're learning. Socrates, who he learned some things from, believed that his mission from the God, from God was to examine his fellow citizens and persuade them that the most important good for a human being was the health of the soul. Wealth, he insisted, does not bring about human excellence or virtue, but virtue makes wealth and everything else good for human beings. So he was a lot about the health of the soul, and believing in human nature, practicing what is good and virtuous. His view on human nature was that he believed humans have a soul that they inherit and that lives on after the body dies. Because of the immortality of the soul, he believed that souls have learned many things throughout their existence, which they bring with them to the bodies they inhabit. So this is Socrates saying that he believes that there are other lives that we have lived and learned, and that are we come back into this physical world to learn more and practice more in that nature. His philosophies today are still relevant for a few reasons. His emphasis was on critical thinking, self-examination, and questioning assumptions, and which are influencing areas today like ethics, politics, and education. So that's pretty good stuff. He claimed that the unexamined life is not worth living, and he believed the key to happiness was self-knowledge, which can only be found when a person searches for the objective truth. Instead of focusing on others, Socrates said, you have to focus on yourself. Question what you already know in order to get closer to the truth and thus make yourself a better person. Think that just lines right on up there with what we practice today, which I just love. In order to get closer to the truth and thus make yourself a better person, you have to focus on yourself and your self, exploring yourself, your spirit, your soul, your life, your thinking, all of it. Some of the quotes he's known for, he said, I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think. Socrates. There is only one good, knowledge, and one evil, ignorance. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. So Socrates said this, and this is like something you hear today that I didn't know it had a reference to anyone in the past as far as, treat people well because you don't know what their experience is today. There's also religions that were known to be close to science. Buddhism was one, and that it was compatible as far as the philosophic and psychological teachings found in the Buddhism. It shared common Western scientific and philosophical thought. So from there, so we have Socrates, Platonism, Quimby was the big one, which Judy shared some of his background as far as he suffered from consumption and experimented with his own ideas for a cure. He I'm gonna read this. He sent out because when he started experimenting with his own ideas and thoughts, he and what he was coming to believe, he started healing others. And so he created this letter that he sent out, and it was a flyer. It says to the sick. And he used this around late 1850s and early 1860s. And it, I'll read some of it because it's a little too long. Dr. P.P. Quimby would respectfully announce to the citizens of blank to be filled in that he will be at the blank, where he will attend to those wishing to consult him in regard to their health. And as his practice is unlike all other medical practice, it is necessary to say that he gives no medicines and makes no outward applications, but simply sits down by the patients, tells them their feelings and what they think is their disease. So they tell him their feelings and what they think the disease is. And if the patient admits that he tells them their feelings, then his explanation is the cure. That's a little confusing, isn't it? He sits down by the patients, tells them, he tells them what he thinks their feelings, the things that are going on, and possibly what he believes is contributing to whatever their disease is. And if the patient admits and says, yeah, that is what's going on, then that becomes the cure. If he succeeds in correcting their error, he changes the fluids of the system and establishes the truth or health. The truth is the cure. So this is like science of mind treatment. You know, it's when the practitioner, minister, regular, just everyday Joe takes time to get clear about the truth and embody it, then that is the effect, then is the cure. Hopefully that makes sense. Let's see. Yeah, and he goes on to say if they don't agree or no explanation is given, he doesn't charge them, blah, blah, blah. But those who aim to just go, you know, and then he goes on to say, yeah, don't believe anybody that's making you pay the quackery, that's making you pay for a cure or a medicine. He's like, yeah, that's baloney. He kind of goes on with that for a while. Then let's see, he's makes the nurse creep. Yeah, he's basically just complaining about people that are just not going to cure you, and they're just going to take your money. They're quack. He's like, you'll not only lose your money, but you'll lose your health. He goes on to say, you know, this has been his mode of practice for 17 years. He gives no opinion. If patients feel pain, they know it, and if he describes their pain, he feels it, and in this explanation lies the cure. So I think that's probably enough for you to get an idea. He goes on. But what I like is that he's basically saying if you acknowledge in your own self-examination, like he's doing the self-examination of them, and by them going, yeah, I believe that is kind of what I've been doing or thinking or whatever. And okay, yeah, now I realize it. Now I can change that. And therefore, that becomes their cure. I like that. Let's see. Barry Morton said this about Quimby, that Quimby's constant practice of his mind cure method led him to make important discoveries related to curing psychosomatic illnesses. And although Quimby did not publish his findings, he trained many others in his methods. In effect, he started a Gnostic healing tradition. Some of his methods were adopted by John Alexander Dowie. And as we know, Mary Baker Eddy, there was Emma Curtis Hopkins. There were lots of people that, there's what the Horatio person, see? Yeah, Julius Drescher and his son Horatio, 1838 to 1893, where Julius Drescher took on, you know, learned a lot from Quimby, and then he was writing and lecturing, and then his son changed his last name so that he wouldn't be confused with the teacher, and was spreading his dad's train teachings, and later edited the Quimby manuscripts after Quimby had already passed. So, history. Ralph Waldo Emerson, when Ernest Holmes read Emerson's essays on spiritual laws, he began to understand the true meaning of the soul. There is an essence in each of us that remains pure and untouched, that can know neither deformity or pain. Only the finite can suffer, for the infinite lies stretched in smiling repose. I really like that quote. Only the finite can suffer, for the infinite lies stretched in smiling repose. A quote from Emerson: when we have destroyed the God of the intellect and broken with the God of tradition, then God fills us with his presence. Stop defining God and simply let God be God in you. That's really good. So the three main ideas of Emerson that Ernest Holmes later adopted just from studying were: we are our own spiritual authority. There is a godlike essence in every person. There is some kind of connection between our thoughts and what happens to us. So those were the ones that he picked up on and learned from Emerson. Then there was also Christian Science, that Ernest also studied, and Mary Baker Eddy. What was most important there for Ernest particularly was the affirmative prayer, positive prayer. So that was the thing that he was interested in the most. He studied, Ernest Holmes studied with her, but he never became a Christian Scientist. He didn't believe in some of the things, like, that Mary Baker Eddy was, the one and only. You have to believe her and everything that she's saying, as well as the medical stuff, as we know, were things that he just could not get on board with. The belief that the physical universe is not real. Science of Mind teaches that the physical universe is real, but it's a derived reality, an effect emanating from the true reality of spirit. Science of Mind teaches every person has the ability to reveal spiritual truth, that there's not a unique spiritual authority like Mary Baker Eddy. He said, no one whispered any revelation into my ear that is not available to every person. So I like it. Anyway, sorry. I know this is a lot of information. Hopefully you're gleaning something from it. Let's see. The things that he couldn't get on board with were like the idea of mental malpractice. Science of Mind teaches positive prayer and believes no one can do mental harm to anyone who is focused on the goodness of God. The authoritarian nature of the organization and the rigidity in its publications, this was the other thing he couldn't get on board with Christian Science. Science of Mind is open at the top, always ready to receive new truth and new information in our world. So, even though Ernest Holmes studied with Mary Baker Eddy, he began developing his own ideas about prayer, realizing that the answer to prayer lies in the mental attitude of the one who prays. It is not God's mind that needs to be changed, but ours. God is to be looked upon as love, impartial and universal. He answers all who pray with real faith, not in God alone, but faith in the answer as well. He Ernest concluded that if anyone could pray effectively, everyone could. Anything anyone has ever done, anybody can do, he said. There can be no secrets in nature. This I have already believed. There is no special providence, no God who says, I am going to tell you what I didn't tell the others. So I love that. Ernest is pretty cool. Pretty cool. And so I'm going to finish this off by just reading this little bit of a page that I thought was interesting. Well, lots of it was interesting, and but again, too much information. So Ernest Holmes is also part of the New Thought movement, right? So even though we're next week, or I mean, the next meeting is going to talk about Science of Mind's beginnings, he is actually a huge part as well. He was also influenced by the writings of Troward later in his life, Plotinus, William James, Emma Curtis Hopkins, Walt Whitman, Meister Eckhart, Saint Augustine, Saint Teresa, Rufus Jones, Evelyn Underhill, Kipling, Wordsworth, Robert Browning. I mean, there's just, this is what I'm saying. This is just too much information. But he was an advocate of study and learning and gleaning ideas and inspiration and joy from learning and paying attention to his own beliefs and what resonated. So, page 23. In later years, and this is Ernest speaking, in later years, naturally, oh, let's see, need to go up a little bit. You have to get accustomed to the language to find meaning back of it. Let's see, who is he talking about? Several years ago, I don't know who he's. Oh, yeah, he was talking about Emma Curtis Hopkins, and he said that she taught classes in mysticism, didn't necessarily call it mysticism, but that's what he called it. And he said he was fortunate enough to have taken them 35 years ago when she must have been over 80. And he said he didn't think she was a Christian scientist, that she was a teacher of teachers and taught the Fillmores and helped them, divine, create that founded unity. Sorry about this. He went on to that. Okay, so basically, someone he gave the book to that was the studies that Emma Curtis Hopkins was teaching, read it, said, I can't make any sense of this. This is I have no clue. Then they kept studying and learning and studying and learning, and they came back to it and went, oh my gosh, this is the best written stuff ever. I totally get it. So he said you have to get accustomed to the language to find meaning back of it. Emily Cady, who wrote Lessons in Truth, took her courses. So did George Burnell. Anyway, I don't need to read all that. He basically is saying that the first thing he ever read by Christian Larson was The Idea Made Real. And in later years, he said that these different groups of people that were spreading their thoughts and beliefs and ideas, he said, they started to break down into groups. The Unity Movement was formed, the Divine Science Church, our own church, Church of Truth, and many of them, all of them stemming out of the teachings of Quimby. Many of the teachers were influenced by him. He was the greatest mystic of modern times, the greatest spiritual genius I ever contacted, because you could feel it. It was all behind the scenes. I think that is the New Thought movement of America. That is where it came from. We came out of it. So his summary basically is saying Quimby was, amazing and a genius, and kind of does solidify the idea that maybe Quimby was the the founder of New Thought, or brought enough of the ideas that were influenced through the ages together to be pretty close to what we believe and practice today. And so it is.